Stevie here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to comedian, writer, and podcaster Sierra Cotto. My favorite part of her interview was talking about her playing the character Evangeline on the show The Sex Lives of College Girls on HBO Max. Thanks for tuning in. Peace. Welcome back to another episode of the Stevie Weeby Show. We have a very special guest tonight. Please welcome for the first time on the podcast, comedian, writer, podcaster, Sierra Cotto.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I had a brain freeze.
No, it's a nerve-wracking last name, you know.
Yeah.
I gave you a lot of, we talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
I feel like builds it up.
How do people usually pronounce it?
Probably Kotow is a very popular, like Kapow.
Kapow.
Skotow. That's like my first initial with it combined, which is very fun.
Yeah. And then you mentioned it's of Chinese and Japanese descent.
Yeah, the name itself, I guess, is Japanese, but I am.
Have you been there?
I've been to Japan. I've been to Tokyo and Kyoto once, and some families out there.
How was your experience there? I mean, is it a whole different world?
I mean, yeah, you know, I went when I was probably, I want to say 12, maybe I was 9, who knows? So I was pretty young, yeah, and then, yeah, I mean, we did a very touristy take on it, you know.
Do you want to visit again soon, possibly?
I would. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever we can travel a little more safely, I guess, but it would be cool.
It's the way I look at Tokyo is like, it's like the future or something. It's like, you know, like Blade Runner or something. Like,
yeah. I feel like Blade Runner definitely took a lot of inspiration from them, you know. Yeah, they've got cool stuff. There was like lots of cool things in vending machines. We loved the vending machines.
That's
or like
so
where
cool.
You can order the like ramen or soup or udon from the vending machine, and then it doesn't come out of the vending machine, but you get a little ticket and then you give it to the guy.
Oh my god.
It felt very COVID safe before that they knew that was a thing.
Yeah, is this true that, because I was on King of the Sting this morning, or I'm losing track of yesterday morning, and they're talking about undergarments or women's underpants sold in vending machines. Is this a true thing? Or
because
they were looking it up and I'm like, what? And
then, okay, so funny, because literally when I was in college, one of like this one random guy, it was like me in this dorm room and a friend who, she's Korean, and then I think this guy was, you know, he was not Asian, and he was like, while I have you guys here, what's with the like underwear in the vending machines in Japan. Like, what? We don't know anything about that. But
it's a real thing.
Apparently the talk of the town.
It's the talk of the town
here in America.
Okay. Now, and then, because those guys were saying, they were like clowning me. They're like, Steve will be the one living inside there. Like, they're saying that I was
like trying to get
I'd be the one
pull it down. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's stuck.
Yeah. So I guess it's a fetish type thing where men want to smell it or something.
Sure, you know, on the go.
It's pretty weird.
Lots of salary men on the go. You know, they need to fit it in between subway stops.
And then they have a lot of other weird, like, I'm sure they have like arcade, like weird
cyber
internet cafes. And
oh, man, I'm sure.
Have you heard of a term called shut-ins?
No.
Well, it takes place Japan and Korea, where these kids or like even adults, they just give up on life and they just live in a room like 24/7.
True shut-ins. Yeah, I mean, who can you blame them? You know what I mean? They pretty much are doing what we were doing last year.
No, but they do that at like before COVID.
Except,
they're
again ahead of the curve. This is advanced living.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I believe it. I personally don't know if I could do that, but maybe for some, that's the way.
you know, and then it's interesting once, because usually the mother is taking care of, let's say it's a boy, but then once the mother passes, like, they're forced to get a job because they can't just mooch off their parents
anymore.
Gotta
be their own mom. Yeah, that's tough. But yeah, I mean, I should clarify, I know nothing about either Japan or China.
Well, I don't know much about Korea either.
Okay, but
yeah.
I'm like probably worse. Like I
can you speak it or understand
it? No, I'm fourth generation on both sides, so it's a real, you know, it's a bit distant. Mm-hmm. I mean, still got a lot of family, you know.
So when you Google. Hear them speak the language, it's like it could be alien.
I mean, yeah, I feel like I can kind of, you know, I've tried to learn a little bit of Japanese because I've heard that might be a slightly easier to pick up on,
right.
Like Mandarin or Cantonese. But, you know, it's not. Unfortunately, I speak English only. And then I took some Spanish in high school.
Yeah.
Shout out to Senora Price, Senora Turnipseed.
Yeah. Por vida. Yeah.
Ooh. That was
good. I know slang.
Also, again,
I know slang.
That's also.
I know slang. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know all
good.
The bad
words.
Yeah,
need.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
More than I have remembered.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's get into your background. Are you originally, like, where are you originally from? Like, where'd you grow up?
Yes. I grew up in La Cañada, California, which is kind of northeast LA
suburbs. How do you spell that?
LA space K A S
Q
C A N A D A. La Canada, but then the N is N-Y-A, tilde.
So La Cañada.
Yes.
Oh, wow. What high school did you go to?
La Cañada High School.
Ooh, shout
creative
out to La.
Creative naming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to La Cañada High School. And then did you take, what were some of your favorite top subjects? Like, were you into writing or math?
Oh,
drama, comedy.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. None of those. I did start stand-up in high school, but I didn't do it in high school. I went out to, like, Burbank Flappers Comedy Club, the Comedy Store.
To do open mics?
Do some open mics, yes. But in high school, I was very studious. I took a lot of AP classes. I was probably one of my favorite topics. I don't know. I mean, I did a lot of coding on the side, so probably computer science. But that class, there's only one class.
Yeah.
I didn't really do much in that one. But I liked history, probably.
Right. What made you even get interested in comedy or pursuing that?
You know, I did a lot of student government, so I was like a big speech kid. Like, I loved to like give speeches and get people to vote for me, and I'd throw in some jokes to get them on my side.
Oh,
and then I learned, hey, you can just do the joke part, and then you don't have to do the government part. You know,
yeah.
So that was probably why
the seed was planted then.
Yeah, and watching a lot of stand up online and Comedy Central.
Who were some of the comics that you would like to watch, or some of your favorites?
At that time, I mean, I remember like Amy Schumer's like sketch show was out, and so, but I had liked her. Yeah, I liked her sketch show. I liked so I watched some Last Comic Standing. I think I liked, you know, I kept my eye out on Asian American comedians. So at the time, I mean, obviously Margaret Cho, like
she's been here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the way we filmed it, it looks like we used a urine filter.
Good.
Like, my camera person back then didn't color correct it.
Oh,
and so when
okay.
that was a big guest, and then when they didn't like it, the episode looks horrible. Like, she did great, but the way we edited it, it was horrible.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, audio, you know, audio is what really counts. Was that also, yeah?
You heard it first from Sierra.
But I'm an audio listener. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes you're going to be doing other things while you're listening.
Right.
So not everyone's going to need to look at perfectly color corrected video.
Thank you. That makes me feel a little bit better.
That's what I'm here for. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Amy Schumer, and recently, well, not recently, but she has been accused of joke thievery in the past.
Oh, yes, yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? I know I brought it up.
Yeah,
I had Mary Lynn on last week, and I brought it up, but we didn't talk about it that much. But what are your thoughts on, like...
joke thievery.
Yeah, and, like...
Oh, sure.
That topic.
You know, I mean, okay. I do remember, like, Patrice O'Neill's bit, right? It was, like... Or was
the Houdini versus...
maybe there's multiple, honestly.
Okay.
But I know there was one where there's like a chunk of a special where they're talking about like sex positions and how like some of them are like just straight up like rape. Like, it's just really not...
Yeah, that one of them was the Houdini. And
Dots. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I do think like it's probably very... I mean, of course... don't do it, but at the same time, I can see people stealing jokes inadvertently, and then, you know, maybe there's some premises. It's also funny, you're like writing this down, you're like, oh, interesting.
I do this every week.
No, yeah, I believe it. I feel like I'm getting a citation. Yeah. Okay, I feel like I'm getting a parking ticket. No, it's totally fine. I think you know, I know that this is bound to happen, and I think it's like definitely a thing more recently where you just can't do it anymore because everybody's, you know, has record of
the internet
stuff, right? Yeah, but before, you know, it used to be like you just do road gigs and people probably all have the same premises and jokes, right?
So that you would you consider that like parallel thinking versus real thievery, and what are the differences? So, because I'm sure you could come up with the same premises,
yeah.
But when one comedian literally takes the wording and it's too close to that joke, then like
then to me that feels stupid. Like I feel like it's like cheating in college, where it's like, are you like you're the risk is too high, because then you can get kicked out, versus like, oh, you get a slightly better grade on the thing, or like nobody really cares about grades unless you're like, I guess, trying to go to law school or something. But like, you know, it just feels like the risk of being accused of thievery, which is like very bad,
you get canceled now.
Yeah, so you might as well just like make up your own joke. Might be worse, but like,
yeah,
you know, that's on you, man.
Right. Now, and then another example that comes to mind is Carlos Mencia, because sure, I know years and years and years. Shout out to Carlos.
Yeah, that seems
know,
like a very
I don't know
unique.
If
you, like,
if you watch this, but he took there was a premise he did that like the Bill Cosby joke,
okay,
about the kid that plays football, and then like the dad's there with the kid the whole time, and by the time the kid makes it to the Super Bowl, when the camera goes on the kid's face, the kid goes, "Hi, mom," and then the dad, you know, it's the whole thing is about, oh, what about the dad? But
right,
those two jokes are literally so identical.
Yeah.
Would you say that's parallel thinking?
Oh, yeah.
No, that's not parallel.
I mean, yeah, I think his case is pretty, like, bizarre.
Like, in what ways?
Like he deliberately is maybe stealing? Like because he's like, that's his thing? I don't know. Like, it's like I feel like at a certain point you would stop, because you'd be like, it's too, like, people are getting angry. It's not worth it again, right?
Yeah.
So it feels like that you're really committed to it.
Right. There's a deeper issue psychologically as well, as far as
I don't know why.
Like, as far as denial and just accept, like, if I were to, you know, steal a candy bar or something, or I steal all the time, I would, you know, I'll admit it and be like, all right, I did it.
Right.
Just to correct the wrong. But I think in this case, even though he might have done it, he's like, no, I never did that. But he definitely
quite
did.
Quite a holdout.
But he's justifying something in his mind is not allowing him to just say, all right, I messed up, guys.
No, can't be said. Yeah.
It's a weird.
Right. There are a lot of weird people, man.
Wait, in comedy? I want to get to that as well.
Okay, yeah.
But, okay, so going back to La Cañada. did you go to college after? Did you pursue more, like, did you enroll in like the Groundlings or stuff like that?
Oh, interesting. No, not really. I was quite a student. So I went to college. I went to Harvard and I studied computer science.
Harvard.
You know, you got to do it.
You're every Asian parent's dream.
Not anymore.
Every tiger parent's dream is
not anymore.
Harvard,
sure.
Stanford.
Yes, we love the brand name of Harvard, right?
I think yeah.
People like it. But yeah, so I did that. And it was a great time. You know.
Did you live? Where is that located? That's on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's in Boston.
Massachusetts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did you live on campus? Like how was that?
Yeah, you basically live on campus the whole time. You're kind of it's Boston is like a, you know, obviously big city.
I've been there
cool,
once.
But then yeah, it's like beautiful on the water. But then we're kind of like in a more like quieter city nearby called Cambridge. So
Cambridge, Massachusetts.
People, you live there. And then you can like take the, you know, T train into Boston, and I would do some stand up there.
How's the scene out there? I heard
really
it's
good.
It's distinct, right?
Oh yeah, it's great.
Like
I
Bill
think,
Burr, isn't Bill Burr like?
Oh
aren't
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bill Burr's
from
there
obviously. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's like I mean, there's so many comics there that are like so good, and I think you know they're easily a lot better than a lot of comics in LA, even though you would think maybe it'd be the other way around. Just
in what
LA
in what
is,
ways? Like, how
I mean,
would you differentiate
I think the reason,
that?
I don't know. My not expert point of view is like, I think they are very funny in their workplace, and so then they're like so funny that they're like, I'm going to do stand up here in this town where, you know, that's not the primary industry. Oh. Versus in LA, you like move out here being like, I want to be famous. I'm a star. And then you're like, maybe stand up. And you might not be as inclined for stand up.
Right.
But then there it's like, if you're doing stand up, you're probably very funny.
Funny.
And people have told you you're funny. And you're finally like, oh, fine, I got to do it. Let me do a little bit more digging to find the spots where I'm going to do
Interesting.
It.
Interesting.
And like, it's a pretty small, like I would say it's probably a little bit more exclusive because of that, because it's a little smaller, a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the comics to break into that, you got to be a little better maybe. I don't know. Who knows? But a lot of respect for them. I was just there as a student, so I didn't really get the full experience, obviously. But yeah.
So you took an interest in the comedy scene in Boston. When did you eventually start doing your own mics there? Did you do mics there?
So, yeah, I did mics there, too. Like, I mean, you know, I guess because I had started in high school, I was kind of, like, doing them out here, and then I would do some while I was at school, but then there's a lot of, like, even on campus, we had our little, like, Harvard College Stand-Up Comic Society. And
no! Like the Dead Poets Society, like Robin Williams, that Robin Williams movie.
Right, except much not that.
right.
But, yeah, no, I mean, like, funny
students.
But
it was students. A club. It was a club.
And, you know, we would perform, we would like have our own little shows in like the lecture halls, and we would, and I would like try to get little opening spots for like, you know, the Wushu club, you know, team,
yeah.
instead, you know, just any, or the drummers, like, you know, oh, you need to open for...
So it's similar to the LA open mic comedy scene.
I mean, if you wanted to be, yeah,
you're
yeah.
performing just in
but
front of
I
other
mean,
comedians.
Great audiences, right? You have your whole like populace there. Walking distance to come watch live shows, and so I feel like it was a good way to come up in a weird way, even though it's
I
not
I think it's cooler that you did in Boston or started
I mean, yeah,
there.
And like kind of I don't know I mean at the same time great yeah there was
because
like
I've done the open uh-huh. mics here.
Oh, it's horrible here. Yeah,
it's kind of like you're doing your thing and they're like,
oh yeah no you're like disturbing everyone, and like there's always more comics than real civilians.
Right.
Yeah.
Would
yeah.
you say out here it's pretty cutthroat? It's about like, I'm the star. Yeah. You're going to listen to me. Mm. I'm the rising person.
Right.
I'm not even listening to them because right. I'm waiting for my time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's
God,
a vibe I got.
LA. Oh, 1,000%. Yeah. It's LA. Everyone's a star.
Yeah.
They're all going to be a star. You're going to remember me someday. I'm going to be on the big lights or whatever people
right.
say. And they're waiting to be discovered. And that's, you know, power to them. A lot of them do.
Now, do you think that they're just trying to fill a void? I don't want to go too deep psychologically, but do you think they're just trying to fill a void of, like, just, like, a feeling of emptiness? You know,
oh,
like...
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, look at me. Yeah. Look at me. Uh-huh. I'm important. Look at me.
I think so. I mean, I feel like L.A., I had this thought. I mean, you know, we definitely here are unique, and I'm including myself in this, right? We're kind of more, like, okay, Instagram, right? Social media, like... posting pictures of your face. Very common. And
I don't do that.
And okay, then yeah. you're then you
like
are
a self like a selfie?
I mean, selfies or like photos that somebody took of you on stage or like, you know, things like
I
that.
I don't
right?
like that either. I don't, because I recently I'm back doing it and like I'm like just 3 weeks in.
Cool.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit more, you know, as far as like pointers or whatever. But I don't like, because there I'm trying to absorb stuff. I'm like, hey, how do you? Like, do you have any tips for me?
Yeah,
and they're like,
yeah.
dude, you have to film your own sets.
Sure.
Go home.
Watch, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't like doing any of that.
I know. It's really painful, right?
I don't want to watch myself or even
listen
I hate my voice.
It's really fifth podcast this week. So you got to get used to it. But I think, you know, it is really like more acceptable here, I think, for people to be okay with that kind of thing, right? Like, people are definitely okay with like... you know, being obsessed with their own image. And
can I confess
that's
something?
That's like the weird part about
yeah.
this place.
Uh-huh. I do a lot, all these podcasts. Mm-hmm. Once I'm done, I'm done. I don't
watch it. Yeah.
I don't look. I don't do any of it. Once I'm done, I don't even, you know, I'll maybe read a few comments and be like, I'm done with that.
That's great. I think that's the way to go, because then you get to, you know, you can get mired in all that. And
yeah.
it's a lot.
So when did you, okay, so you're in these comedy clubs on campus. When did you, like, really, like, pursue, like, no, you were pursuing it back then because you were doing mics performing in front of other colleagues or whatnot.
Sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, I was doing it. I would come back home to La Cunada in the summers and do more, like, I would do the open mic at the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory every
Meltdown,
time.
Do Meltdown?
Yeah, I volunteered at Meltdown a little bit whatever. Unpaid mm-hmm. work. And yeah, so I feel like I did a lot of that. that. And then I got to do like Last Comic Standing when I was a junior in college.
So hello.
That was like, you know, very comic lucky. Standing. Very lucky. But yeah, so at that point, I'd probably been doing stand up for like 4 years or so. But I think, you know, was the young, diverse human they wanted on screen. And
were there many Asian comics or actresses or whatever during that time?
Yeah. I mean, and even that season alone, so they did like 100 comedians, I think.
Was that before Dat Phan?
It was after, because Dat Phan was season one.
Oh, Dat Phan was season one.
Dat Phan won season one. Am I right?
Shout out to Dat Phan.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I mean, was somebody I watched early on because I remember watching Last Comic Standing season one. And Alonzo Bowden season two. Uh-huh. But I think, so I was season nine.
You were season nine.
And this was also after a lot of breaks in between and stuff, right? But there are other Asian comics on there. There was Shang Wang. Mm-hmm. There was Helen Hong, I think, that season. And I mean, I'm probably missing a bunch because we were all kind of different days. But mm-hmm. Yeah, there were like multiple. So that was good.
And then were you nervous doing that? I mean, that's a lot of pressure, right? It's the Last Comic Standing.
It was weird. Yeah, you only get 3 minutes, you know, so it was a little high stress right before. But, you know, your set.
How'd you come up with your set for that particular situation?
I knew what they wanted, like, you know, it's NBC. They wanted like relatively not too dirty. So yeah. I just, you know, picked what I could out of my set. And I think you send it to them in writing and then they kind of approve it or not.
They have to approve your material?
Then, yeah. And then they also, when I did my full 3 minutes, the full 3 minutes didn't air. And even some comedians, not their whole set didn't air. But I think they took like, 30 seconds or something probably from mine.
Wow. And then after that, like, how did you place or how does that work?
No, yeah. I mean, people, so they did 100. I was like, I was like in the kind of limbo zone where they're like, okay, stick around. I didn't immediately move on. But then they were like, well, you might get moved on now. And then I didn't. So I like hung around a couple more days and then they gave me the green to go home.
But you got exposure from being on that show.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is I had like nothing to lose because I was like very, you know, young and
how
green.
How old were you?
I was 20.
You were 20 and you were on that?
Very lucky. And,
dude.
And I mean, you know, I think it was just like me being wide eyed and happy to be there. And then, you know, I had no expectations.
Now, this always interests me. Have you dealt with bombing or do you have like a couple of those stories and how that made you feel? How did you overcome that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think everyone does. I mean, I feel like with me, I find it really tough to bomb in front of people that I know or that I like want to impress, especially other comics.
Like your friend. Oh, your other
more
comic.
Like other comics. Yeah. You know, because it's like, I'm like, oh, that person's here.
Oh, no. So that's worse.
Well.
That's
I
worse?
Find that worse. I don't know.
Because it's your colleague. It's your colleagues. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm only 2.5-3 weeks in. I don't.
But what if you were doing, you know, what I mean, like, it's like, I don't know. This is maybe not the same parallel. But if you did a podcast with your favorite host and or somebody you looked up to and then were nervous in front of them. Right?
Oh,
versus like, right. Versus like, oh, with like, I don't know, some stranger. Right.
Who's, oh, like, that makes me feel anxious.
Because it's like you want to, I mean, especially with like, you know that as a comic or like as somebody working in LA, right, you might meet someone you've looked up to and you want to do your job well in front of them, right, versus.
Right. You like know, if you're a sous chef or something, you want to, and there's other sous chefs, you want to show them like, hey, look, I got
right.
this move. I
like that's the best intro you can have, right?
Yeah.
And the worst would be. Not
like
well
you like oh mm-hmm. I messed that up I missed this I missed
right
that.
Right
yeah.
Or like or just you know somebody who isn't a comedian but like you like their other worker you know
right mm-hmm. So do you remember the first time you consciously knew because you could
right.
justify a lot of your sets like I didn't kill I didn't bomb I did okay but
yeah,
do you remember that one time you're like oh I that was bad
yeah well I mean okay honestly I don't I feel like I block them out pretty well. I'm pretty happy about that.
Really?
I think because I know well, I know the feeling, but I like could not tell you like what specifically it was because I think I go, yeah, that was bad. And then I just like try to do another show so I can bury it
to
deeper.
Right the wrong.
Kind of. Or like to, yeah, just to get a different taste in your mouth, you know?
So is that like a human psychological defense
hopefully.
Mental thing you do?
I guess so, inadvertently. You don't allow... I don't have wow. like something where I shudder. I do have that maybe of like other moments in my life, but I don't know if I have like a distinct bomb. Like, I know what it's like to bomb and I do it a lot, but I feel like... I mean, okay, here's one I know. So there was one where it was like a pretty packed, and I feel like I do this a lot. Have you ever performed at the Virgil in Los Angeles, California?
No, I used to do Marty's, I used to do Rock Paper, I did Meltdown, Silver Lake, whatever, the one under the bridge thing.
That old Sunset thing?
Yeah, and then I did ones where it was like, there was a pool hall, this was like more like good. Burbank or North,
of course. Those are all standard places. I think this, you know, so the Virgil's kind of like more of a, I guess it's probably kind of one of those alt comedy venues.
I knew you were going to say that.
That's like where like Hot Tub Show happens, if you heard of that long running show. And like, you'd think great shows. I mean, not that specific show is great, but I feel like every time I performed at the Virgil, the stage is a little high. And I feel really exposed because I like to be on a stage because I'm short. I am, 5'1".
I'm short too.
Yeah. And so the stage, you want that. You need that. I also like a microphone because I feel like I'm a little quiet.
Yeah.
So but that stage is like a little too high. So I feel like people are like looking up my nose.
Right.
And anytime I do that, there's also, it's an alt crowd, whatever it might be, but I...
What makes it an alt crowd? Because I asked Mary Lynn this, remember we were talking about this? Because she comes from like Largo and all that.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But
what is it?
In your definition, what makes it alternative?
It's like people who maybe, I think it's really hard to define because it's like it's changed so much, right? But I would say in my own experience, it's like people who are kind of like hipsters out on the east side of LA who... like pride themselves as like comedy nerds, but maybe don't know comedy, like don't do stand up, but they are comedy nerds and they're like, I love, like they could like list a bunch of like comedians who we may not know because they're kind of like not mainstream or they kind of like experimental kind of stuff, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's a very, I think it can be like a tougher crowd sometimes because they're kind of like looking for the different new thing.
So is it the subject matter as well?
Yeah.
What
or like just the
about?
Style even too. Like, I mean, it could be anything.
So would you say, I don't know if this is a good example, it would be like punk rock, they're more like punk rock or something?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, opposed I mean, I, again, like, I don't, it's kind of like opposed to like, I know, like a lot, it's very contentious, so I know there's a lot of people who are like, oh, that's not, that doesn't, you know, but.
All right, well, we could always edit that out. I mean, I don't really.
No, it's not that contentious.
But okay, so they're looking for different,
Yeah, maybe, different, maybe a little like more like performance art. Yeah, different.
They're just looking for different.
So
Continue.
Safe. Anyway, anytime I perform there, kind of feels awkward, or at least I don't hear the laughter. And then I think one friend who is a comedian who I really look up to, like she DM'd me after and she was, and I didn't even know she was in the audience. But like, again, a lot of people in the audience, and I'm like, oh shit, I probably made somebody like, oh, I didn't know she was so bad. So then she DM'd me and she was like, hey, your jokes are good. Just like, be confident. be confident in front of
this crowd.
I mean, and that was great advice because I think that's the thing. If anytime I don't have a great show, I look back on it, I'm like, I think partially I specifically, my type, I have to go in very confident because I just don't come off that way in my stature.
Yeah.
And so if I go out there kind of flippant, then you kind of just make everybody nervous. I make everyone nervous. I make everyone like, oh God, what is she? Even though I've been doing this for so damn long. So I think what I learned from a lot of those bombs are like, just gotta like, even if it's not going well, I just gotta keep being confident because I know my writing is good. So I just need to like say the jokes,
Now, can you fake confidence?
That's profound.
Because I'm sure more than half the time you don't even feel that. Confident. Can you fake like the term fake it till you make
yes.
Can you do that in stand-up comedy?
These are great questions. I mean, yeah, right. I think so, because the whole thing I think is kind of faking it till you make it anyway, because why the hell are we on stage with a microphone and they aren't,
like, a lot of it is smoke and mirrors, I think. Like, I discussed this with another comic or someone, like maybe a past guest, but like I think with Jeremiah, and we're talking about like little subtleties of the stage performance itself, like entering a stage. You know, you're like in the green room, and let's say it's like at an improv or something, and the way you enter on the stage is important. yeah. opposed to like walking up like, and they, you know, that's why, because my brother, he's been doing it 26 years and I've always studied him. But I noticed this, I mentioned this before, every time he comes out, he's smiling. You know, like, you know, sure, I'm yeah, like, yeah, I know, great. I was just in the car with him. He wasn't feeling that way or.
So that's already, yeah, faking it.
So he's kind of faking that, like, hey,
yeah,
you know,
and
like.
Everybody's on that level. Yeah. yeah. So. Oh, that's a great observation. I think that's exactly what we learned to do, right? And you have to do things like move the mic stand out of the way. You know, I feel like that was like something that somebody told me to do early on. And it is true. It does look, if you leave it up there, it just looks a little green. It looks a little like you maybe don't know to do that. And so. That's even a signal in it.
That's
itself.
So interesting, because would you say even that subtlety, the mic stand in the middle of the stage center, right?
Yeah.
I've seen people just not touch it and just do their whole set just standing upright and just, you know, or leaning against it or.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's your style, I think that's fine. But if you're taking the mic out and you leave the stand in the middle, I think that's a signal that it looks like maybe you're not. You don't know what's up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just now what the proper way. So I'm just going to guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm wrong. If you were to grab the mic stand, you just put it in the back, kind of like in the middle, central
off the
in
side,
the back.
Off to, you know, diagonally in the back, whatever, so that you're the thing in the middle, you know.
And then as far as the material, your material itself, what was your trajectory like, or your progression like? How were you influenced by certain comedians? Like, oh, I'm going to do one-liners, or I'm going to do the storytelling style.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I think I was always more on the one-liner side as far as like length goes. And I think that was a little bit because of like lack of confidence. You know, I was like, man, you know, if I have five jokes, then the odds are maybe, you know, some of those will work. Versus if I have one long joke, then what if it doesn't work, you know? So I think a lot of it was like thinking about the fact that I was like going to come up and do 3 minutes. Ooh. I wasn't going to do a 3 minute long story, you know? So my jokes were shorter starting out. And I think they still are pretty short. I don't think I'm not a story person. Yes. Yeah.
You're giving them jabs.
It's a lot of jabs, a lot of like, you know, laughs along the way, hopefully, you know, it's a little bit, I would say my comedy is probably steeped in lack of confidence, I'm setting up a lot of what's that, like safety nets of like, and then we can laugh here and we can laugh here and we can laugh here. And I think what I've thought about in recent years is trying to figure out where I can actually just talk and maybe people don't laugh and it's okay because it's still interesting. I think I was relying too much on that, you just saying that. Yeah.
You know, like just starting up again, I notice when, obviously, half the stuff I'm going to do is not going to work. But I noticed that the silences in between, I felt like having a panic attack.
Sure.
In my mind, I was like, oh no, they see through me.
Right,
oh.
Right. Yeah,
it's not working. It's not working.
Yeah, you feel like you're dying. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I got to get
like,
out of here.
I noticed, like, shout out to the homie Chappelle Lacey, because I was watching him.
So funny.
Yeah, Chappelle's the homie. Like, you got to love the guy. Because he had moments like, because Brendan and him and David Lucas and them, they let me do guest spots at the Ha Ha Club. And I was trying to study them. And he had those kinds of moments, but he was fine with it. Like,
right. He
just kept going and composed.
Yeah. And that's,
how do you guys get to that point?
Well, gosh, some people get there faster than I did. I mean, I feel like I still struggle with it. But yeah, I think a lot of it is just being like, man, you know, it's going to be fine. Maybe that's like our life philosophy, you know? It's like, if you can just be like, it's going to be fine, so let me just get through this.
Yeah.
And not panic and bail out, which is totally a thing that I think is possible to do in stand-up. But I've found that I can't get better unless I have those moments, those stretches
so
where I trust myself.
So you need those moments.
I mean, I guess, because it's like, you kind of have to be like, say, you know, you're not going to get new material until you try out new jokes. And then some of those new jokes might totally bomb. And then it's like, I was definitely in the space for a long time where I would be like, okay, now we're going to go back to the golden stuff that I know works because I'm too scared because I just had a joke bomb.
Right.
But then I'll never try those other two jokes that I, you know,
I
need to get out there.
I really admire the thing where you're just throwing it out there to see what sticks. Opposed to like, I know this is going to stick. I know this is going to
work. Well, yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, that's the scary part, but I guess we got to do that. But I hate doing that. I'm too late. You know, I like being cozy and safe.
And just doing your thing and getting
off. Yeah, I mean, you love that.
I notice opposed to 7 years ago when I bombed at the Tempe Improv doing my cowboy rap bit, and I'm not going to regurgitate. I've said it. I've told the story right just 100 times. right, I noticed this time around, I'm noticing there's like it's like a social experiment, kind of like where, like when I know, they could feel my desperate, like when when I could tell they're like kind of knowing when I'm expecting them to laugh, and then when it doesn't work, it's kind of like they're like not saying it, but they're like, no, we're not going to laugh at that part. But then when I, but when I just say, well, fuck it, and I just kind of ad lib or I'm just off the cuff and I say something else that's I didn't plan on getting a laugh, they then they laugh there. What's going on there then?
I gotta diagnose this crowd from afar. I mean, you know, it sounds very familiar. I feel like that's a thing. It's just like, you know, when you're trying super hard, that's when people don't want to fucking give it to you,
but
right?
That's the thing. They know. They're not going to tell you, but it's this thing in the room where it's this a collective thing where they could kind of read into your energy field or something. Right?
Ooh, they know. I think so. There is like a thing. I think it's like everyone's staring at you. We're all like having the same experience at the same time in many ways. So the being tapped into the like social cues of reading what you expect or reading where you're going with the joke and stuff like that, I think is like hyper aware, you know, if they're watching and paying attention.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what's like annoying about it. But that's what's fun about like if you call something out that happens in the room, like if like somebody drops a glass and then everybody, you know, crowd work or just like in the moment, like addressing your own, like, oh, you guys didn't laugh there. I guess that I'm going to back to the drawing board, whatever people fucking say. Right. There was like, oh, I'm not going to. And they cross out the joke in their notebook, which is funny. Like, I, you know, we see it all the time as comics. People use that tool. To
that
bail themselves
in itself
out.
Could be the joke.
But yeah, I mean, but I think that's how when you acknowledge it, people get really like, oh my God, we're all in the same thing. We're all experiencing the same thing. You know what I mean? It's very exciting. Right. It's very exciting.
So, like you saying that this is like the social experience. This is like a psychological social thing happening in one room.
Right.
That I didn't realize was like, because before I would look at the ground and I would just go into my
right. Do your,
I wouldn't even acknowledge anyone out there.
I mean, that's
no, and another no, and I paid dearly.
It works for some people. I know. I think, it's better dearly. If you can be present with the crowd, but that's like, that's how everyone, I feel, begins, because it's a scary thing to be like, oh, so I'm supposed to acknowledge the fact that a bunch of people are watching me talk right now? Like, that seems like worse than trying to just do what you came to do. Right?
Yeah, I corrected that wrong, by the way.
I believe it.
A few weeks ago, I bombed at the Tempe Improv 7 years ago, and I used to.
And you went back there.
And I used to work there seven. I worked at the Tempe Improv when I went to Arizona State, so I was a food runner there. So there's a lot at stake. I needed to correct the wrong. I'm not saying I killed. I didn't feel like I killed. I got a few chuckles, but I felt like I corrected it.
Amazing. Round of applause.
Thank you.
I think, you know, like. Do as I do, just black out the bad ones and paint over them with the good ones.
So you're like a Jedi. You're like a comedy Jedi.
No, I think it's probably unhealthy in many other ways, but in this case, it works.
No, but I could tell just with the stuff you told me, Harvard, like clubs, you know what I mean?
Oh,
and
sure.
You knew what you wanted to do. You were smart. You knew.
It might appear that way in retrospect, but yeah, at the time, no idea. Still don't really know. Do I like doing stand-up still? I don't know.
You don't even know if you like it? You don't even know?
I mean, I've been doing it for so gosh darn long.
How many years now?
Started when I was 16, probably like 10. Over 10 years.
Uh-huh. You started that young?
Yeah, God. Never do that. So yeah, I mean, and again, it's I started in high school where what does that even mean? In college where I'm opening for drumming, people who are drumming on buckets. Like, it doesn't really necessarily have the same as like starting in New York and hitting the clubs and getting past at the things, right? Mm-mm. So it's a very different 10 years, but
that's impressive though. I mean,
it's an evolving relationship with
your perceptions have changed, your experiences have changed.
The world has changed.
The way you look at life has changed. Mm-hmm. Bless you, Chelsea. And so that's interesting. As far as the material itself, how do you write? Do you write premises? Like if you're lying in bed, that could be funny, and you just write the premise down and work around that? How do you work that out? Or set up punch. Like, how do you learn?
Yeah,
how to write?
I don't know, man. I'm pretty bad at writing stuff like for stand up because I think, you know, it has to be for me. It's like, oh, I got to make sure I keep a thing on my phone, so I try to have at least my phone. I always have my phone on me, so that helps. But I think it's just like I kind of have to have the full joke for me, or like kind of a premise, but then maybe I work out the rest of the premise on stage.
And is it a conversational style? Like where you're, you know, opposed to like maybe like people on the like New York comics, they might have like set up punch, set up punch, set up punch.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I notice LA people, I don't know. I don't want to generalize, you know, because I might not know what I'm talking about. So but it's more like more the hey, I'm going to tell you a story. And then within this story, I'm going to have sprinkles
of
gold.
Yeah, I have seen that. I've seen that style.
I've
seen that style. Yeah. I mean, I like to have punchlines, but I think I get lazy and sometimes I only have premises. And then I try to come up with like a fun, punchy end that I think could use work.
Right. So you think of the, you know, it's traditional, your style. Like, that's
yeah,
the way.
Ideally,
like,
you know.
Like Rodney Dangerfield. Like, comics back then, you know, Rodney Dangerfield didn't go like, I'm going to tell you a story. He goes, hey, my wife, da-da-da-da. And then, boom, punchline. Hey, my wife says she didn't want to cook. Boom, punchline. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, yeah. That's a very like, clear style. I don't think it's that. I don't think I do that. But I think, yeah, I think I like to, you know, I'm not saying, like, crazy stories about how I, you know, ran into celebrity and, you know, got mistaken as a dog. Yeah, I don't know what people do. But I think I like to keep it personal. Again, I get very scared about the plagiarism thing. So I try to make things very much like about my life so that it's not like I'm thinking of like, oh, hey, you know what's crazy? Like, you know how like when you're sitting in traffic, it's like everyone, you know, I try not to do the same.
I try not to do stuff where
people would have parallel thinking.
Yeah.
If you're talking about yourself and you're like, this literally happened to me. If someone has the same thing, then it's like purely a coincidence because like they would have to have the same thing happen to them, or they would have to have the same family, or they'd have to have
God,
the same,
that's so tricky.
You know,
yeah, so
background. Mm-hmm.
So if you do a topical thing, you know, other people are.
Sure. That's the thing. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's fine. I mean, you know, like think about all the tweets that get written about every time there's a headline, right? There's always going to be a couple that are the same, and that's fine. I think,
yeah.
You know, we're going to, you know, especially if the premise is very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to always have like 9 people being like, Ed Sheeran, more like Dead Sheeran. I don't know. I have
no idea what that
headline is, but, you know, it's going to always kind of come back to the same stuff.
Yeah.
And like same with, you know, people writing for late night. That must be fucking hard because they have to think about the 9 other Jimmys and what they're going to say, you know.
So that'd be a good segue because you got into writing as well, like you know Netflix stuff and this other show you're on.
Loved to write. Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved with all the writing, the comedy writing or script writing?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it was from stand up. Like, I think I got some when I first moved out here,
mm-hmm.
I got reps because I was doing stand up and I was acting like or whatever. I got some auditions because I was doing stand up, and then those reps were like, hey. Are you interested in writing? And I was doing, when I was at Harvard, I was at the Lampoon, which is like this comedy magazine where a lot of writers would come out of. So in my head, I didn't really consider myself a writer, but, you know, saw that future in some friends. And so that's like very nice to see because you're like, oh, I didn't even know. Some people, it's like, what the kind of job is TV writer? Like some people don't know what that is,
yeah.
Right? So anyway, knew that was a possibility, started as a writer's assistant and then worked my way up by, you know, meeting people and getting hired on other shows and finally got my like break as a real writer for a show called Earth to Ned on Disney Plus.
Can you say that again?
Oh, Earth to Ned on Disney Plus. It is available actually
Earth
now.
Earth to Ned?
Earth to Ned. Like
Earth to Ned.
Yeah.
Earth
like
to
yeah.
Ned on what?
Disney Plus.
Disney Plus.
But yeah, that came out like last year. I wrote for it back in like 2019.
Yeah.
So that was a while ago. But yeah, I feel like, you know, then from there you kind of gather experience.
Yeah.
Start, you know, you meet other people, you interview for other shows, and actually
during
the pandemic.
Don't you have another show like thing on Netflix?
A lot of so I'm currently writing for a show on Netflix that's unannounced, but
you can't talk about it now.
Yeah, I guess not because I don't really know when it'll come out.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But it'll probably be out in quite a while. I write for animation, or I'm writing for an animated show right now, and then last year I also wrote wrote for another animated show called Close Enough on HBO Max.
HBO Max.
We love them. And that one, I won't come out even until April. And I wrote for that last October.
Wow.
Started writing for last for October.
But don't you, there's another thing about sex lives.
Oh, yeah. That's an acting thing. I didn't write for that, but yeah.
So you acted in that.
Let's,
how did you land, how many auditions did you go through to get that?
It was,
can we talk about that?
Yeah, we can. Yeah. I mean, I'm a minor character in the show, so it's not like a, it's not that crazy. I was a, you know, a recurring.
Okay.
So I play Evangeline, and she's a college student in a humor magazine at the fictional College of Essex, which is very similar to my, you know, it's like a, you know, bougie East Coast school.
Yeah.
She's in a humor magazine. I was in a humor. So it's very similar to my life. But this was during the pandemic. I sent in a tape and then they booked me off the tape. And then I got to do 7 episodes and it was all shot. We had to do a lot of COVID tests. They're very safe. I had to do implied nudity one scene.
What does that even mean?
So implied nudity. So the second episode, they go to a naked party, these girls. They go to which is like a college thing, you know. I mean, yeah, your classic naked party, you go, everybody's naked, but it's very casual. Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, that's a thing, just a casual naked party?
I didn't go to any of these when I was in college. Did you?
No.
Well, we were missing out.
I was in the backyard near the keg, grabbing another Keystone Light, trying to make it back to my dorm. No, none of that existed when I went to school.
Listen, the kids these days, am I right? No, yeah,
so
you got to do.
Implied nudity is
they shoot you like shoulder. So they did like collarbones up, but it looks like I might be naked. And then there are a lot of other folks who were like full naked.
Really?
Yeah. If they wanted to be, you know,
that
everybody.
So that's a technical term in.
We're not gonna shoot your nips. You know,
nothing.
No nips, but no booty crack, but maybe some shoulders.
Right.
And you know what they do with these naked things? They still spray down my entire body with makeup, like an air spray. What's it called? Airbrush.
Yeah. Why?
So I mean, because if they, it's just further makeup, I guess, for your whole body. But it's like, oh, yeah, I guess like that like vein you don't want them to see, or like that, like, you know, the kind of like mole or like miscolor.
I got a whole solar system right here. I got one, two, three, four. I got like 8 right here in a row.
I mean, they would have fucking hairbrushed the shit out of that. And you would have been right on my face.
Yeah.
Would have been no more planets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, were they looking for an Asian character?
Yes, for my character, she was written as Korean.
So the competition was rough.
Yeah.
You had some competition.
There are other Asians going against you. I'm so honored to get this role.
So do you
very great diverse cast.
So when you showed up to the casting place, like when you're in the lobby area signing in, is there a little sizing up happening?
I mean, typically,
like, you know
yes.
what I mean? You could feel that energy. Like, oh
yeah. Love to show up and see a lot of these other beautiful Asian ladies.
Hi, Shannon. Good seeing
you.
Yeah.
Oh, hi. I know. Yeah. You become friends with them.
you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I didn't have to go in because it was just, you know, during COVID. So I just had to send in a
So they
video.
Requested you.
Well, yeah, I mean, these all the auditions are like that, I guess.
Oh, so you didn't have to...
I didn't have to go into, like, a physical space.
See, that's... You dodged a few bullets there.
Well, I've done that a lot in the past, but in this one, no. Yeah.
No, I think that's easier because when you have to physically show up
to a
place... Uh-huh. Like, I remember, I don't do commercials anymore, but I was this close to getting a Verizon Wireless campaign. Christmas caroling. I would have made $100,000.
Okay. Don't think about it. Black it out.
I made it to the end. It was me and this other Asian guy in the same room.
You want to say his name?
No. Let's say his name is Brian.
Okay. Yeah.
His name was Brian Yim, which it wasn't.
Brian Yim.
So the producers are there. Everyone's there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, Brian, Steve, can you go up and do the thing? All right. Brian.
And
you go
like,
on a thing.
Oh, no. Oh my God. Okay.
Brian,
I have, great, Brian.
And no, Brian, stay there. Brian, stay right there.
No.
Brian, try it in this way. You know, it was that. And
I'm
so
I'm sorry.
I'm on the side of the room, like, and now sweat is start like I feel sweat coming down. My eyes are crossing. I was like, and then to the point where I started noticing they acted like I wasn't even in the room.
You were in the room.
I was in Brian's audition.
Yeah.
Even though it was me or Brian.
That's cruel.
Oh, it gets worse. So I'm in there. And they just keep everything he's doing escalates. Oh, these Brian! Oh, this is great. Hey, let's have him do, you know, have him do this.
Oh, no. Brian,
you know.
Yeah.
So it got to the point where they just kind of like, they notice like the fly on the wall, like, oh, what's over there? Steve, you could wait in the hallway. Steven, you can wait in the hallway.
Yeah.
So I like walked out in the hallway where I, in my mind, I'm trying to justify like, well, maybe I still have a chance.
Right. Yeah. Maybe they're just seeing how I behave in a tough situation.
Yeah, this is a psychological test. Uh-huh. But then I noticed that I'm like, I knew it was more time was going by because I think it was maybe at the La Brea, 200 South La Brea. Well, anyway, the lobby area started filling in with a whole different audition for like Chrysler or something.
Yeah.
You know, like other people were signing for a new thing.
Right.
So, you know, and I'm like, oh, like he's been in there for like 45
minutes. Okay. Uh-huh.
And then finally one of the assistants in the room, Steven, you could actually go home.
Oh, my God.
All right. Didn't end there. So I knew I didn't get it. Okay, fast forward to like when we used to watch.
TBT.
They played the shit out of that.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, it's okay, man. I'm sorry.
He made a lot of money.
He did. Brian motherfucking Yim. BFY. You know, I think it's that, I'm sorry, that's really rough, but I think that is so, like a lot of people do go through that.
I'm here with you. Go ahead.
Okay, I have another horror story.
Yeah.
I can try to end it with that,
and then I want to dude, the hour flew by with you.
Yeah.
Let's say that story and let's plug all your stuff.
Oh yes.
Future
yes.
dates, websites, social. Uh-huh. Go.
Do you want me to say my horror story?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I was vulnerable with.
Yes.
That.
Thank you for being so vulnerable.
Now it's your
I
turn.
Think. Yes. Okay. So my horror story with auditioning. In the room, I tested for this series pilot, and you know, again, you sign the contract before, so you're like
non-disclosure.
You know, non-disclosure, but you sign the contract of how much money you're gonna make for per episode. So you gotta, you know, your rep's already negotiated it for you. You sign the contract, being like, if I fucking get this, I'm gonna be very rich. Okay,
how much?
I mean,
how
you
much
know,
money?
How much they got it too? I don't think I can say.
Oh, you get okay. Oh, no, just
NDA. It was like I was literally not making anything, and then it was literally like
NDA.
I would have made more in one episode than I made the whole year, the previous year, right?
We got it,
which is insane. A lot. We don't make much money, but so then I'm signing that, and then you know you go in. I was also a little bit like under the weather, I think, but I was trying to suppress that, and they had me. You know, I had already done 2 auditions in person up to this point. I had gone to the director's house in Hancock Park and gone to like do a workshop with him or like the EP or whatever. And then they took us, like 5 of us girls were going up for this part to, you know, it was in Sony. And then we had to go to this like little theater room where all the execs and the casting directors are there sitting and watching you. And you go up and under the light and you do the audition with like someone who's sitting real far away from you. And I go... I'm like trying to be very calm. The other actors like have, you know, shit in their mouths, trying to like do like exercises. And I'm like not an actor at this point. You know, I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I'm literally these people are like professionals. And I like literally just do open mic. Like I just do comedy. Like I don't really know what's
pretentious.
Happening. Yeah, it's.
Continue.
But I mean, whatever works, right? So you get called in one at a time. So they call, you know, a couple of them in, come back out and they call me in and they're like, and I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I did it. And I totally like blinked on one of the lines where like it was my turn and I was looking at them and they were looking at me and I was like, what do you mean? You know, and then like, so there was like that.
Oh.
Didn't go great. And then on the way out, they said, thank you. And they said, not my name, but one of the names of the other actors. They like got my name wrong. After all like 5 sessions, they said, thank you so-and-so, not my name. And then I said, and then I left. And then I think they kind of realized, oh, shoot, I said the wrong name. But then I went back out, and then they called in one of the other people again, and then they dismissed us all. But, you know, and I got very sick the next day because I was obviously trying to, like, keep it contained. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was like, oh, this is how it works. Like, nobody cares. Like these people do not see us as, you know, we're our products, meat bags to puppeteer. And
I like that. Wait, what, say that one more time?
Oh, we're meat bags to puppeteer. I don't actually believe that about the art of acting or comedy or anything, but I think that, you know, it's a business. Sometimes we are meat bags to puppeteer. And yeah, it was very eye opening. Anyway, didn't get cast there, but actually none of us got cast. They actually didn't find their person that day, which it happens.
Was it it was painful, that experience?
It was very painful. And then the pilot, though, I didn't suffer as badly because the pilot did not go to series.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Yeah, fuck that.
A message to them.
But, you know,
times have changed, my friends. Uh-huh. We do our own content now.
Sure,
we
make our own way. I think that is
true. I don't need your approval. I don't know. I need his approval or her approval. We do our own content.
Exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
This is where it's at.
We do our own thing. This is my own network. Subscribe to the Stevie Weeby Show today. Follow her Instagram.
Right. Instagram at Sierra Kato, SierraKatow.
Yeah.
Now, same with Twitter. Right,
times have changed.
Yeah.
Who wants to do TV anyway?
Honestly, it's a lot of work. Ugh. You got to put on makeup. They got to spray your body down if they're doing implied nudity. They block out your planets on your face.
Now, it's different if Quentin Tarantino is doing a movie and you're up for that.
That's wow.
You know what I mean? So like, let's say he's like, I like her. You know,
you have to have good feet.
And you probably need to know kung fu. Can you flip?
Oh right, yeah, he's
can
not. You backflip?
That's different. You'd want to get that. Because it's a Tarantino
Sure, I mean,
movie.
You know, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's always fun to work with awesome people.
Yeah.
Right. But there is a lot of bureaucracy.
Politics as well.
Just a lot of layers you got to get through that may not have to do with actual stuff, you know?
God, yeah.
I'm being vague here, but, you know.
Well, you know, time flew by. Right, now's the time where you plug all your stuff, like future comedy shows, website, Instagram again, merch, whatever you want to do. Go ahead. This is your time.
Cool. Wait, did I plug it earlier too
soon?
Do
it again. Do it again, though.
Did I say it too soon? Was that too thirsty?
No,
okay.
No. Like the more the better. The more.
Okay,
spell
great.
It out like you
No,
did.
Great. Love it. Okay. Instagram, SierraKatow. That's my name. Same with Twitter. And I have a website, sierrakatow.com. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Sierrakatow.com. I watch The Sex Lives of College Girls now out on HBO Max. I play Evangeline. I have a podcast that's called Stay Positive, and I know you do a lot of podcasts, but would love to have you on as a guest.
Yes.
I just be on Zoom.
Yeah. Really?
I'll do it on Zoom.
Really?
I mean, you can do come in person if you want, but I mean, you know, it's a lot easier, and I live very far. What else? I mean, watch Close Enough on HBO Max, watch Earth to Ned on Disney Plus, watch there's a Disney Junior preschool show I wrote for called
so cool.
It's called Eureka. It doesn't come out for like probably in March,
right,
till March, but
and what about your future show dates or what?
Tickets. I have a show I run once a month in Silver Lake in Los Angeles called Heat Wave, and we do it at Silver Lake Lounge, which is like this cool bar that does music and it does comedy. Mm-hmm. And our next one is December 12th, which is a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing them every month, and we kind of typically we do them on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But if you can follow at Heat Wave Show on Instagram, mm-hmm. that's where we post all our new stuff, or I post it on my Instagram too.
So it's a collective show of like your friends, comedians.
Yeah, it's a stand-up show. So it's like I host it with my comedian friend Nick Scardarossi, and mm-hmm. we have a lineup of, you know,
alt or club comics.
Oh, I see.
Well, that's what we learned that
question.
Term last week.
See, I feel like I'm a little. Yeah, I feel like I used to lean a little bit more club comic when I was younger, but I feel like right now, I mean, I don't really book it. It's kind of our producer, and I feel like our producer and my co-host too maybe are more in the realm of like alt you
That's
know
fine.
Comics who are up who are like
up and coming.
I don't want to say up and coming. I think they've up and came, you know what I mean?
Oh, they already
came.
Oh, Good, good, good. So check that out too if you happen to be. Is this in Silver Lake?
Silver Lake, yeah.
So if you happen to be in Silver Lake on that Sunday, where could they get tickets for that?
You can go to. I feel like you can just Google Silver Lake Lounge and then they have the ticket link on the site.
Oh, I know where that is. That's like further down Sunset.
Yeah, Sunset and.
It's by Tropical Coffee Shop.
Yeah.
Right next door.
Yeah.
That's
a great spot.
Yeah, I used to kind of live in that neighborhood.
Oh, great. Yeah. You're familiar.
Uh-huh. Well, it was an honor having you. That was awesome. Thank you. We'll get a part two, part three, whatever you need. Also, before you go, if you have any suggestions as far as your colleagues or any other comedians think would be a good fit for this, So thanks for tuning in again to another episode of the Stevie Wiebe Show. If you want to help support the platform, go to patreon.com/Stevie Wiebe. All my music's at steviewiebebandcamp.com. My website is steviewiebeshow.com. Just know that the merch orders will be delayed because of COVID and everything. But I do check that. YouTube.com/scissorbros. Me and Jeremiah are going to be doing a live podcast at Soul Joel's. And I didn't write it down. I didn't even write it down there. Soul Joel's or Joel Souls in Jeffersonville, Pennsylvania, January 8th. And if you go to my Instagram at QUANGOU, you click the link, it's at the top to get tickets. Please, if you're in Jeffersonville, Pennsylvania, come to that show, please, okay? I haven't been there.
Me neither.
And it's like 30, it's going to be cold.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Bundle up.
Yeah. We do have a P.O. box. If you want to send any packages or fan mail or anything, go to send all your stuff to 1425 North Cherokee Avenue, P.O. Box 1391, L.A., California 90093. I covered it all, you think? Yeah? Chelsea? Yeah? Dude, it was an honor having you.
Thank you.
My buddy Skip is a trip, feeling blue like a crib. Framed for robbing a bank, letting loose from the hip. He really couldn't predict this grip was so full of angst. Him and Henry Woodward Peckers did a song and dance at bit. Oh, rodeo man in the West, you can. You're the best on the land to bless the sands. Do the bull with your hand. Never end sustained. I'm down for the count on the ground freight train. Living today, don't give it away. The peace and the praise, the rays. Shining it down to mightiest crowns, the finest of thrones delayed. Skippy's afraid, he feels betrayed. Live this way, can deal with shade. His fate is a spade, he made the greatest blade in a charade of pain. I am not a man, I am an animal of mail. I live by maritime, the law of water about to sail. When my mother had me, I slipped out of her canal. What you call a sailing ship is named after a female.